Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
The ball is in the Russian court. Well, those were the words of the US Secretary of State Marco Rubio earlier this week after Vladimir Zelensky agreed to an American proposal for an unconditional ceasefire in Ukraine. Well, now Vladimir Putin seems to have returned the ball. But what to make of his response? Donico Bacon is Professor of Politics in the DCU School of Law and joins us on the line. And I'm joined from Washington by Simon Marks, Chief Correspondent of Feature Story News. Donico Bacon, back on to you first. Vladimir Putin in his news conference yesterday in Moscow, he said he agrees with the idea of a ceasefire in Ukraine. Questions remain, though, and there seem to be many questions on the Russian side. He set out a number of conditions that he wants. Is his plan, do you think, to mire the Americans in all of these questions and make the negotiations so protracted that nothing actually moves ahead?
Yeah, I think that's an accurate synopsis of what the Russian approach is. As you mentioned, Marco Rubio had said the ball is in Russia's court. So Vladimir Putin has said that he's willing to play, but everything in terms of the conditions that he's outlined suggests that he's not ready for any kind of ceasefire. I mean, and the Russians have been clear all along that they never were interested in a temporary unconditional ceasefire. From their perspective, they're only interested in a ceasefire if it addresses, in Putin's words, the root causes of the conflict. And that's why they've come to this with a long list of conditions, which they know the Ukrainians could never accept. But it's putting it out there that they're engaged with Trump because, of course, they don't want to dismiss Trump openly. And it's putting the ball, from their perspective, back in the Ukrainians' court. And what they hope, I think, will happen is that the Americans will now go to the Ukrainians and say, well, look, the Russians said they're interested in a ceasefire, but you have to complete the shopping list of requirements that the Russians ask for. And the pressure will be on the Ukrainians again. That's the fear.
Mm-hmm. It will be interesting to see how the Americans respond to this because they have some experience. And Roland Oliphant is writing about this in a piece published in the Irish Independent today, saying this is exactly what happened back in 2014 with other American administrations, when the Russians said, yeah, we're absolutely going to play ball, but here are all the things we need to have happen. And it just gets stuck. So we know that Donald Trump is impatient for a ceasefire. So all eyes will be on his response here.
Yeah, I mean, the Russians are far more emotionally invested in this than the Americans. And they know that the Americans are disengaging and that Donald Trump has many different fish he wants to fry and has a short attention span. So they're hoping to capitalize, I think, on that and saying, look, we can deliver peace, but only on these conditions. And Trump has been at pains to point out during that awful meeting that occurred 2 weeks ago now at the Oval Office, he was at pains to point out to Zelensky that you don't have any of the cards. And he was suggesting that Russia has the cards, the U.S. has the cards, and his administration, his team has been saying that all along as well. So I think the fear is that he'll apply pressure where he thinks it's weakest, and that's on Ukraine. And you know, Russia is, they're old hands at this. You have to remember that Vladimir Putin has been in power for a quarter century. He's Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has been there for two decades. The Trump team are relative novices, and as I said, they have many different things that they want to engage in. Ukraine is just one of them, and from many perspectives, they see Ukraine as an inconvenience, getting in the way of a larger rapprochement between the US and Russia.
Mm-hmm. So if we're agreed then with Donald Trump that Ukraine doesn't have many cards to play here, what can Vladimir Zelensky do? I mean, he said he believes that Vladimir Putin is preparing to reject the deal outright. He's already seen ahead a couple of steps. What are his options?
Well, from his perspective, the Russians are trying to manipulate the process as they've done in the past, and he has been looking for security guarantees. That's at the heart of the Ukrainian demand. They haven't been able to get them as yet because they're not willing to accept something ephemeral. And at the same time, the Russians have said they won't accept European peacekeepers in Ukraine. That was one of the points that Vladimir Putin was raising as well. He said, look, they have a 2,000-kilometer border. Who will police this ceasefire if indeed it takes place? So, I mean, but Zelensky's popularity has gone up dramatically, actually, not that it was ever below 50%. But since that debacle in the Oval Office, you know, opinion polls suggest that he has a trust rating of about two-thirds of the population. And there's an unwillingness amongst Ukrainians, even though it might seem the odds are stacked against them from a rational perspective, considering the resources that are available to Russia and the fact that the US is disengaging, they see this as an existential threat. They see that when the Russians move forward, they kill, they occupy, they Russify. So they don't see that they have any, possibility of stopping to fight. And they're trying to present the argument, which I of course think is a persuasive one, that, you know, they are interested in peace. I mean, this is their country after all, but Russia is interested in Ukraine. The only peace that they're interested in is a piece of Ukraine as much as they can get, and they already occupy almost a fifth of it.
Mm-hmm. But they are in a weak position, and we've seen that over the last week or so when the military aid is switched off and the intelligence assistance is switched off by the United States, and then on a whim, when you engage, it's back on again. So unless Zelensky does Donald Trump's bidding, he is really at sea here, because the EU certainly can't step in the short to medium term.
Well, the EU has tried to step up its contribution, and that's why you have this rearm program. But it will be difficult for the EU to reverse decades of neglect in terms of security and defense investment overnight. They are putting together a package of 40 billion euro in military supplies for Ukraine for the coming year. So they are still holding on to the argument that they will support Ukraine for as long as Ukraine needs to resist Russian aggression. They are, in that sense, fundamentally different from the Americans. The Americans are saying that they don't actually have any favorites. They see this as just a conflict between two neighbors. They don't see it as an invasion of one country by another, which has implications, for example, with the UN Charter. So the Ukrainians, yes, it's true that they have a difficult situation. It's very unenviable. But as I said, they can't simply submit either. That's from their perspective. And you have to remember that Ukrainians have been resisting Russian aggression now for 3 years successfully. And Russia controls less territory today than it did in April 2022. Mm-hmm. It's still a substantial bloc. But it's the momentum is still, it's very much trench warfare. It's still very much a stalemate.
Donika, stay with us if you can. We want to get the view from the United States now. Simon Marks, chief correspondent with Feature Story News, is with us. Simon, thank you for being with us. I see in the last hour or so the Kremlin confirming that Vladimir Putin had late night talks with Donald Trump's special envoy, Steve Witkoff, in Moscow. He then, according to the Kremlin, is on his way back to update Donald Trump on what has happened in those conversations. But what do you think the Americans will have been hoping for from that meeting last night?
Well, I think, Claire, that what Donald Trump was hoping for was a simple yes from Vladimir Putin. I'm all in on this 30-day ceasefire. But that is more reflective of the relative naivety that the Trump team is bringing to these conversations than of political reality. I mean, Vladimir Putin is a veteran, wily and canny operator. And Donald Trump's critics have long argued that the Russian leader sees the Trump administration coming, not least by insisting that Steve Witkoff should be the special envoy from the United States with whom they negotiate, a man with absolutely zero diplomatic experience beyond the negotiation of a prisoner release that resulted in an American who had been jailed for drugs offences in Russia being returned to the United States a few weeks ago. So the Russians have very deliberately rejected much more seasoned hands, including General Keith Kellogg, the man who was named by Donald Trump as his special envoy initially to end the conflict. And what Vladimir Putin is doing is essentially saying ceasefires, I love ceasefires in general, but the specifics of this ceasefire are not yet to my liking. And so Donald Trump is now going to have to understand that the terms that Russia is demanding, Ukraine would not be allowed even to engage in military training during the course of a 30-day ceasefire. They wouldn't be allowed to move their troops around the conflict zone. Ukraine would not be allowed to receive any inward shipments of military assistance or weaponry from the United States or the European Union. I mean, those are just some of the terms that Vladimir Putin and the Russians have laid out for them to come on board with this ceasefire. They're essentially not only seeking a capitulation by Ukraine, but they're actually seeking a capitulation by Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just looking, Donika, if I could bring you back in here, the latest now coming from the Kremlin in the last few minutes, they're saying that they sent Steve Witkoff back to Donald Trump with a message that there are grounds for cautious optimism. So this plays into exactly what we were saying. His intention, and tell me if you agree, is to string Donald Trump along here.
Well, that's it. It's to give the impression that the Russians are in favor of peace. And it's clear that they're not. I mean, Donald Trump has not been able to extract one single concession from the Russians since he took office.
But has he asked is the question.
That's the big question, because these meetings take place behind closed doors, as it did in Saudi Arabia. What the Trump administration have done is, without consulting Ukraine, offered Russia concessions on Ukraine's behalf. Even before formal negotiations began, they said openly that Ukraine couldn't expect to get back its territory, that it couldn't expect to join NATO, that the Americans wouldn't be involved in any post-conflict kind of security arrangement. So, you know, they have already, you know, loaded the dice very much in favor of the Russians. So I think that, you know, this is very much, Putin realizes this, and I think Putin realizes that he just has to give a cosmetic commitment to verbalizing, peace, and that would be enough for the Trump administration to do what instinctively they are most inclined to do, which is to apply pressure on Ukraine. Mm-hmm. To fold.
And they're both saying, both the Russians and the Americans, that there will be this scheduled call, the date has yet to be set, between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump. I mean, what do you expect the next likely moves are, Donika, on the diplomatic front?
I think that what you'll have is that Putin will outline, either directly or indirectly to Trump, what his conditions are. And he will try and package that in a way that is conciliatory, that, of course, plays to Trump's ego, applauds him for his initiative, and says, look, you just have to go to the Ukrainians. I admire the way you stood up to Zelensky in the Oval Office. You need to go back to him and tell him who's boss and tell him what's necessary, because you've talked to me. And if he fulfills these commitments, then I'm all on for a peace process. Mm-hmm. But again, you have to stress the gap that's between the two sides. They're diametrically opposed. In the Russian constitution, it says that the five regions of Kherson, Zaporizhia, Donetsk, Luhansk, Crimea are all part of Russia. So from their perspective, Ukrainians who are fighting in somewhere like a city like Kherson are on Russian soil. And they're telling them that as a precondition for negotiations, they have to withdraw from the territory that Russians don't control. That's extremely unlikely, to put it mildly. But the Trump administration, in their eagerness, and Trump personally, who's hankering after a peace prize, and their ignorance might fall into that trap of applying even more pressure on Zelensky because they want a quick deal from Trump's perspective.
All right, Donika, we let you go. I want to continue on now with Simon. Donika, thank you for being with us. Simon Marks, I suppose we don't know how long Donald Trump is going to allow this situation continue, because, you know, he did say, didn't he, that he was going to end the war immediately once he took office. If he feels that Vladimir Putin is stringing him along, we can't predict his reaction or his response, can we?
I think it's very difficult to predict his response, Claire, because, as we all know, we don't fully understand the nature of the relationship between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin, and the nature of Donald Trump's seemingly friendly approach towards Russia in general. I mean, yesterday at the White House, even before those talks with Steve Witkoff had taken place in Moscow, Donald Trump was talking as though the contours of a peace agreement, a long-term peace agreement, were already in place. He insisted that talks had been held with the Ukrainians about the ceding of territory that would need to take place to Russia, indicated that even discussions had been had about the future of the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant and who's going to end up controlling that. Well, all of that came as complete news to many observers here in Washington, D.C., who certainly were not aware that kind of detail had been discussed with Ukraine. And it's far from clear that Ukraine necessarily understands that, you know, the contours of an agreement absolutely already exist. But mm-hmm. as Donika was saying, I mean, throughout the last few weeks, Donald Trump has given Vladimir Putin pretty much everything that he wants in terms of a negotiation. I mean, really pre-gaming the outcome of all of this to tilt in Russia's favor. Now, if Vladimir Putin is not going to play ball, certainly in that kind of binary way that Donald Trump would like to see, There are certainly fresh sanctions that the American president has indicated he might apply to Russia. Mm-hmm. There were reports yesterday that some Russian financial institutions are no longer going to enjoy a carve-out banning them from accessing the US financial system as they process Russian energy payments. But just how far Donald Trump is prepared to go toe-to-toe with Vladimir Putin is very, very unclear.
I want to ask you as well about this incident last night involving the US Vice President J.D. Vance. There are reports and video available online. He was booed by the audience at Washington's Kennedy Center last night. He was taking his seat at a National Symphony Orchestra, a highly unusual event, I would imagine, in the Kennedy Center. Explain what happened.
Very unusual indeed in the rarefied atmosphere of the Kennedy Center. The Kennedy Center, Claire, is becoming a bit of a cipher for the heart and soul of traditional Washington, D.C. And there has been a tremendous amount of pearl clutching here over Donald Trump's decision essentially to take the Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts over. He has named himself the leader of that organization. He's placed one of his most zealous supporters, Ambassador Rick Grinnell, in charge of daily operations at the Kennedy Center. We have seen thousands of Washingtonians insisting they will never attend another event there for as long as Donald Trump is in charge of it. Remember, this city is a Democratic Party stronghold. We've seen artists canceling performances at the Kennedy Center. An upcoming scheduled set of performances of Hamilton, the musical, was angrily canceled by Lin-Manuel Miranda, composer of that musical, who insists he won't return to the Kennedy Center until Donald Trump is no longer president of the United States. And so J.D. Vance was on the receiving end last night of booing from the audience there. Just a few days ago, he was being barracked on the ski slopes of Vermont. I mean, all of this indicates that for half the country, people playing a significant role in the Trump administration are becoming pariahs. And I think J.D. Vance may be at the early stages of a journey that sees him eventually having to limit some of the public appearances that he makes.
Well, we'll see. Simon, thank you very much. Simon Marks there from Feature Story News.